before. Hannah, Dr. Myers said, as Hannah closed her folder and stood up, ready to leave at the end of their session. Could you stay back for a moment? Miles, you're free to go. Hannah's tutorial partner nodded and left, leaving Hannah standing slightly awkwardly, wondering what Dr. Myers was about to tell her. Had she slipped up? He had seemed pleased with her essay this time, but the same couldn't be said for some of her earlier efforts. It was a moment before she realised Dr. Myers was talking, and she wasn't paying attention. "Little drinks party," he was saying. "I always have one at the end of every term. I invite a few particularly promising students along. We make connections. It's rather fun." Hannah stood, holding her breath, not wanting to make an assumption that might swiftly be shot down. Particularly promising students? Was he really talking about her? But surely he wouldn't have mentioned the drinks party if he didn't intend to invite her.
"It's this Friday," he said. "Very informal. Just a glass of sherry in my rooms. At least you won't have any trouble finding it."
Hannah gave a laugh and then, lacking anything else to say, said, "Thank you so much. I mean, yes, I'd love to come."
"Wonderful. 8 p.m.
"Can I bring anything?"
"No, just yourself."
Outside, in the corridor, she leaned against the wall, feeling a smile spreading across her face. Particularly promising. Could it really be true? The big question, of course, was what to wear. Very informal, Dr. Myers had said, which was the worst kind of invitation. At least with the ones that said white tie or academic gowns, you knew where you stood. Very informal could mean anything from party dresses to jeans. "Jeans," April said decisively when Hannah asked her advice. "And a pleated poplin camisole, very high at the neck, no sleeves, single pearl button fastener behind, business at the front, party in the back." "Yes," Hannah said impatiently, "but I don't have a..." "What was it?" "A pleated something, something?" "A top like that. Friday is 2 days away. I haven't got the time to go shopping." Or the money, she thought, but did not say. Such considerations didn't weigh with April. "You may not have one," April said, "but I have. Come through here." Hannah had not been into April's bedroom for several weeks. With a joint sitting area, they didn't need to go into each other's rooms to socialise. And since Will was a frequent visitor, Hannah was always half afraid of what she might find if she knocked. Now, she was amazed afresh, not just at the difference between April's room and her own, a difference which had seeped out into the living room where the boring regulation university furniture was slowly being replaced or supplemented by April's own luxuriously expensive taste, but by the mess. There were clothes everywhere. Designer garments piled up in corners, beaded tops slung over lamps, Jimmy Choo's hanging casually by a strap from a desk chair. But not just clothes. Half-drunk cups of coffee languished on the windowsill, sporting an extravagant coating of mould. Books were scattered like splay-winged birds. An open bottle of pills spilled across the nightstand. A half-eaten donut leached grease into a pile of essays. And a makeup palette lay burst open on the rug, coloured powder ground into the carpet pile. In one corner a lamp burned, low and golden, and April clutched her head. "Oh, shit," Every time I come in here, I'm shocked at how awful it is. I wish I could pay Sue to sort it, but she's such a bitch. She's not a bitch, Hannah said reflexively. She's just busy. But she was eyeing the chaos and silently agreeing that it was going to take more than April to sort this out. There were weeks of mess here, and university rules stated that they had to clear their rooms for the Christmas break. How do you find anything?
Well, at any rate, I know where the camisole is. I tried it on, but it's too big for me, so you might as well take it.
She picked her way through the mess to the far corner, near a long, gilt-edged mirror that looked like an antique, and began rooting through a pile of clothes there.
Aha!
Her voice was triumphant as she held up a crisp, starched top in old ivory.
Here it is. It'll be perfect. Try it on. Go on.
She made no move to turn around or give Hannah her privacy, so, after a slightly awkward pause, Hannah turned her back and stripped off the T-shirt she was wearing, sliding the camisole over her head. Then she turned around. So? She could tell at once, even without looking in the mirror, that April was right. The top suited her. April's expression told her that. She clapped her hands together and spun Hannah around so that she could do up the single mother-of-pearl button at the back of Hannah's neck.
Oh, that is perfect, April breathed, reverentially and seriously.
She turned Hannah around again, facing the mirror.
Bend over.
Hannah bent obediently and April tutted.
Well, you can't wear a bra. The whole point of that top is the back. Look, when you stand straight, it's totally demure, she demonstrated, holding up a hand mirror so that Hannah could see behind herself. And when you bend or twist,
Hannah did so, seeing the sliver of creamy spine that immediately showed between the pleats. It was indeed completely spoiled by her very basic supermarket bra showing through the gap.
But you don't need a bra. Oh, you're going to look gorgeous.
Thank you, Hannah said rather awkwardly. And, I mean, should I dry clean it before I return it? Wash it?
I told you, April sounded impatient. It's yours.
But, April... Hannah plucked at the tag still dangling from an inner seam. I can't take this... It's brand new. If I don't cut the tags, you could return it. And her eyes alighted on the price. Jesus Christ!
April! This was 800 quid! I'm not going to return it, April said carelessly. So if you don't take it, it's just going to rot in the corner there.
She stood back, appraising Hannah seriously, and then said...
The jeans are fine, but you need proper shoes. Have you got any heels?
Hannah nodded and went through to her own room to find the pair of black Dulcis heels her mum had bought her for formal events and interviews just before term started. When she returned wearing them, April made a face of barely concealed disgust.
Look, I don't mean to be rude... But those shoes are an insult to that top. What size are you?
6, Hannah said. She knew her expression must look mutinous. The shoes were basic, but they looked totally inoffensive to her eye. And so what if she couldn't afford April's designer sandals? Not everyone was the heir to a city fortune. But April wasn't paying her any attention. She was too busy rooting through a tangle of shoes in the bottom of her wardrobe. 2 pairs of Louboutins flew past Hannah's knees, followed by a single Jimmy Choo sandal. And then April straightened, holding a pair of deep green Manolo Blahniks. They were crocodile embossed leather, open-toed, and about 3 inches higher than Hannah's usual style.
There. These are alone. By the way, they're one of my favourite pairs. But don't worry about scarves. I've worn them outside already.
Done protesting, Hannah slipped her feet into the shoes.
They were extremely high, and for a moment she teetered, but then she caught her balance and stood, looking at herself in the mirror. Behind her, April pulled Hannah's hair out of its clip and shook it loose over her shoulders. A different person looked back at Hannah from the mirror. Taller, more confident, rocking her designer top and shoes like she was born to it. The shoes picked out the green in her eyes, and the ivory set off her pale skin and dark hair. She looked like she was beautiful. She looked like she was one of April's friends. "There," April said, her face so close to Hannah's that Hannah could feel her breath on her ear. "You look majestic." It was just a couple of days later that Hannah found herself putting the poplin top back on, braless this time, and making up her eyes with smoky eyeshadow and liner. Finally, she put on a swipe of dark red lipstick, but she knew as soon as she'd done it that it was a mistake. It made her mouth look comically huge, and with the dramatic eyes, the effect was clownishly overdone. Instead, she wiped it off with a tissue, leaving a faint flush that somehow made her mouth look as if she had just been roughly kissed. That unaccustomed stranger from the other day stared back at her from the little mirror above her desk. "April," she called, picking her way carefully out into the living room. "What do you think?" There was the rattle of a door handle, and April appeared in the doorway to her room. She was wearing makeup herself, pale face and scarlet lips, and a devastatingly simple black silk sheath that showed the hollows of her collarbones and the lines of her white throat and made her golden hair glow like it was electrified. "Perfect," she said, smiling broadly. "You look $1 million.
"I ought to," Hannah said ruefully. She looked down at the shoes. "I'd better not ask how much these cost, or I'll be terrified of snapping a heel.
Are you going out?"
"I am,"
April said, and her smile turned wicked. "But not far. I'm coming with you."
Hannah felt her insides turn over.
"Oh, April, I'm so sorry. It's a party for his students, and not all of them. He didn't invite Miles, even. I'm sorry, I feel really bad. I should have explained."
"You did," April said. She knelt down beside the mini-fridge in the corner of the room, where Hannah kept the milk for her morning coffee, and pulled out a bottle of Dom Pérignon.
"But I don't care. I'm coming." "Oh, don't worry," she added, as Hannah began to protest. "I'll make it clear you didn't invite me, but gate-crashing is my very favourite occupation."
She straightened, tucking the bottle under her arm.
"Anyway, Dr. Myers is rather dishy. I'm not letting you have him all to yourself."
For a long moment, Hannah just stood, looking at April in helpless exasperation, unsure whether to be angry or push back, and then she caved.
"Fine, I guess I can't stop you, but don't follow me in or it'll look like I invited you."
"Fine," April shot back. "In fact, you know what? I'll lead the way."
And before Hannah could stop her, she opened the door to the set, stalked across the hallway, and rapped loudly on Dr. Myers's door. The door opened, and the sound of chamber music carried across the hall on a wave of student laughter, followed by Dr. Myers's voice full of welcome and bonhomie.
"Hello!"
And then, slightly puzzled,
"I'm sorry, can I help you?"
"Hi!"
There was no embarrassment in April's voice, and peering through the crack in the door, her face flushed with preemptive mortification, Hannah saw her stick out a hand and lean confidentially in towards Dr. Myers.
I'm your neighbour, April. I heard a rumour that your end-of-term drinks parties were the hottest ticket in Pelham, but my friend... She paused just long enough to make Hannah nervous. Joanne told me that I would never get in because I wasn't clever enough. She bet me a bottle of champagne that I wouldn't get past the door, but I thought perhaps I could persuade you to drink the winnings.
She held out the bottle of Dom Perignon and trailed off, smiling up at Dr. Myers, her expression an intoxicating mix of pleading, adoration, and just a tiny little touch of flirtation.
Well,
Hannah heard Dr. Myers' voice take on an amused quality, and she saw him look April up and down, taking in the willowy limbs, the slim, fragile neck, the expensive sheath dress with, Hannah strongly suspected, no underwear beneath. Finally, his eyes alighted on the champagne.
Dom Perignon une tec. Well, well, well. We can't have Joanne feathering the reputation of this college as an elitist establishment, can we?
The door opened slightly farther, and Dr. Myers stood back. April gave a dazzling smile and stepped forward into his rooms, but as she did, she turned momentarily, and Hannah saw her give the smallest of winks over her bare shoulder. And then she disappeared, and the door closed behind her. After. The meal is delicious, and somehow, over the three courses and coffee, Hannah manages to forget Neville and April and all her worries, or at least push them to the back of her mind, and just enjoy being with Will. They may not have that many of these nights left, after all. Once the baby comes, that will be an end to cosy little bistro suppers, at least for a good few months. She needs to make the most of this, make the most of the time they have left with just the two of them. They talk about Will's boss, about the possible partnership position, and what it would mean for Will if he got it. More money, yes, but also longer hours, more responsibility, more pressure to bring in new clients, all of which would be a double-edged sword with a new baby at the same time. They talk about the birth, the weird mix of emotion and admin that having a baby entails. The deadline is coming up for choosing a hospital, and they haven't even started to look into antenatal classes yet. Hannah talks about work, about the funny customer who comes in every few weeks asking for books he's read about in the paper but can never remember the titles. This week's was Scott's author, cover's got a wee lad on the front and a funny name. Will guesses the answer correctly without too many clues. Shuggy Bane. Sometimes Hannah wonders if her customer's memory is really as bad as he makes out, or whether it's become like a game between them. And there's another, an elderly lady who comes in every Tuesday and buys a book, and then comes back the following Tuesday and tells Hannah how many marks out of 10 she would award it. She has never, ever given 10. Hamnet got 8.75. This week, Razor Blade Tears got 9.2. The first Bridgerton novel got 7.7. Lord of the Flies got a surprising 4.1. Hannah finds it impossible to predict what will score high. Some of her most confident recommendations bomb, but she lives in hope of finding something that will hit the magic jackpot. At last, Will asks for the bill, and then gets up to go to the bathroom. It arrives while he is away. Normally, Hannah would just glance at the total and then shove the printout across the table along with their joint account card. But this time, she looks at it, really looks at it. The starters alone were more than a tenner each, and £27 for a bottle of Pinot Grigio. Will hasn't even drunk all of it, just half. Why on earth did they order a bottle when she's not even drinking? And the breadsticks! £3 for breadsticks! She had no idea they even charged for those. She pays and is sitting, chin in her hands, waiting for Will to come back, when she hears a clear, carrying voice from behind her.
"Darling, you call this a Vesper? It tastes more like a gin and tonic, and not a very good one."
All the hairs on the back of Hannah's neck prickle. The voice is coming from the restaurant's bar. It is drawling, confident, and achingly familiar. Before she can think better of it, Hannah stands up, swings round, sending her chair clattering to the floor. But even as she scans the row of backs at the chrome counter, her heart is sinking, and she knows the truth. It wasn't April. It's never April. It was just a well-to-do woman with an English accent. Hannah's own longing did the rest, just as it has 100 times before.
"Allow me,"
says a voice at her elbow, and Hannah turns to see a tall, bespectacled figure holding out her handbag.
"Hugh!" She manages a smile as she takes the bag. "This is a nice surprise, and thank you."
It's not a surprise, not exactly. Edinburgh is a small city in a lot of ways, and Hugh's practice isn't far from the restaurant, but it's a big enough place that it's still fairly unlikely to run into friends at random.
"You're most welcome," Hugh says,
with that oddly shy formality he's had for as long as she's known him, even after a decade of friendship and more landmark events than she can remember. He was Will's best man at their wedding, for goodness sake. They kiss each other on both cheeks, and as she breathes in Hugh's expensive aftershave, Hannah remembers with a laugh at herself how strange and performative that continental kiss first felt to her when she arrived at Oxford. And now look at her, air-kissing without a second thought.
"How are you?" she asks.
"I'm all right," he says thoughtfully,
looking at her with a slightly discomforting air of appraisal, like she is one of his patients.
"More to the point, how are you? I thought of you yesterday, when I heard the news."
I'm okay."
It's not a lie, not really. But Hugh is Will's best friend and confidant, not hers. Hannah, well, she hasn't really had a best friend, if she's being honest. Not since April. It's not that she doesn't have friends. She goes for a drink with Robin every now and again, and there's a handful of people she knows through work or from her various short-lived hobbies. Pottery was the one that lasted longest. But you don't have to be a psychoanalyst to join the dots, and Hannah's not an idiot. She knows the truth. Since April died, she hasn't allowed herself to make anyone that important to her, because she doesn't trust them not to get snatched away. Will is the sole exception, the only person who has penetrated that self-protective armour. And maybe he only managed it because she had let him under her skin before April died.
"Hugh!"
The voice comes from over Hannah's shoulder, and she turns to see Will weaving his way between tables towards them.
"Mate, how are you?"
They hug, a kind of manly backslap, and Hugh says,
"I'm good. I was just telling Hannah. My thoughts went to both of you when I heard the news."
"Yeah, it's, I mean, it's a lot,"
Will says with an awkward shrug. His eyes meet Hannah's.
He knows how much he hates talking about this, particularly in public. They both live in dread of someone leaning across, tapping their shoulder. I'm sorry, but I couldn't help but overhear. Perhaps Hugh senses their discomfort because he straightens, claps Will on the shoulder and says,
Well, anyway, I won't keep you both, but let's have drinks. It's been too long.
It has, Will agrees. I was thinking the other day, I haven't seen you since the cricket season finished, and I don't think we've been out as a threesome since, God, probably June?
That was right about when they found out about the baby. Hannah stopped accepting invitations out to the pub because she wasn't ready to tell anyone the news, and it was getting increasingly hard to explain away her tiredness and inability to drink. But it's different now. She's visibly pregnant, and, in any case, Hugh was one of the first people Will rang after their 12-week scan.
We should do brunch,
Hugh is saying now as he buttons up his overcoat.
Soon. Make the most of your freedom while you still have it.
He gives a laugh, and Hannah and Will echo it.
Take care of yourself, Hugh, Hannah says, and she means it. She is genuinely fond of Hugh.
And this must be hard for him as well. He was there that night, after all.
He didn't go through what Hannah did. He wasn't April's best friend, but he was dragged through the courts too, giving evidence on what time they found her, how hard he had fought to revive her. And then she and Will have each other. Hugh has no one. He lives alone. He doesn't even have a steady girlfriend, as far as Hannah knows, though presumably he was dining with someone tonight. He's not like Will, easily gregarious, finding something in common with everyone he meets. He's charming and gentle and courteous, but there's a reserve that can be hard to get past. He's more like Hannah in that respect. Perhaps that's why he followed Will to Edinburgh, and why he's made sure to keep in touch with Emily, even after all these years. Like Hannah, he doesn't make friends lightly, so he can't afford to lose them. She and Will watch as Hugh tucks his umbrella under his arm and disappears out into the twinkling darkness of a rainy Edinburgh night, the lamps glittering off the steep steps, the honey-coloured stone alleyways drenched to dark brown. For a moment, Hannah sees him, silhouetted against a street lamp. Then he is gone.
Before. As the door closed behind April, Hannah found herself feeling angry in some way she could not quite justify. Wasn't it enough that April had looks and clothes and money, and that she had to share a room with her, and Will was what she really meant, but she wouldn't let herself admit that. Still, though, did she really have to muscle in on everything that was Hannah's? For a second, Hannah was tempted to turn away, go back to her room, wipe off the makeup and throw the heels into the cesspit of April's wardrobe. But she knew that would be stupid. Dr. Myers was expecting her. She had said she would go. It would be rude to just not turn up, and cutting off her nose to spite her face. Instead, she counted to 10 in her head, then teetered unsteadily across the landing to knock on Dr. Myers's door.
Hello?
It was a tall, willowy girl with long dark hair who opened it, looking Hannah up and down with a slightly superior air. A gust of laughter and conversation flooded past her into the corridor.
Can I help you?
Hi, Hannah said a little nervously. I'm Hannah. Dr. Myers invited me to his drinks party.
Hannah Jones,
Dr. Myers's familiar voice came from behind the girl, and he slipped his arm around her shoulders in a gesture that could have been simply an avuncular way of ushering the girl aside to make room for himself in the doorway, but could have been something more possessive. He was wearing a wine-coloured velvet jacket and the same white silk cravat he had worn at Hannah's first tutorial.
"Welcome, welcome. Come in, make yourself at home in my humble abode, such as it is. Have a glass of champagne."
The willowy girl stood back, and Dr. Myers showed Hannah into a wood-panelled sitting room full of students. Looking around, Hannah saw that they were overwhelmingly female. She could pick out a few boys here and there, but the ratio was maybe 5 to 1 in favour of women. Perhaps that wasn't surprising, though, given that Dr. Myers taught English, which was a female-heavy subject. There was a small table standing by a crackling fire, holding a tray of empty glasses, and Dr. Myers picked up a flute and filled it from a bottle that Hannah recognised as the one April had taken from the fridge.
"Hannah, let me introduce you to a few of my favourite students," Dr. Myers said expansively, waving his hand around the group. "This is Clara Heathcliff Vine, a luminary in the Oxford Union."
He indicated a small pixie-faced girl curled up in the window seat, who turned at the sound of her name and nodded briefly before continuing her conversation.
"Orion Williams, a particularly brilliant third year."
He indicated a tall, dark-haired boy standing by the fireplace, who nodded a little awkwardly and gave Hannah a shy smile.
"Ruby Ray, shining star of my second-year tutorial group."
He bowed with mock solemnity to the girl who had opened the door to Hannah.
"And, oh, this is one of my newest protégés, the sparkling April Clark Cliveden."
He stood back, and Hannah saw April perched on the arm of a wing-back chair next to a square-shouldered boy wearing a navy blazer that Hannah vaguely recognised as a sporting blue.
"Everybody!"
Dr. Myers looked vaguely around the room and then put his arm around Hannah, his palm hot and a little damp against her bare shoulder.
"Allow me to introduce the thrillingly gifted Hannah Jones, who is in the process of proving once again that many of Oxford's finest minds come from a state school, single-parent, working-class background."
There was a ripple of approval from round the room. "We're so open-minded, such a meritocracy." Hannah opened her mouth and then shut it again, unable to think of what to say. She was still groping for the appropriate response when one of the students behind Dr. Myers touched his arm and whispered something, and he gave a little jump.
"Oh, thank you. Well remembered, Madeleine. Excuse me, Hannah, I must tend to the canapés."
He gave her shoulder a little squeeze and then released her and hurried away.
"I didn't realise you were so brave," said a mocking voice in her ear,
and Hannah turned to see that April had disentangled herself from the boy in the blazer and was standing behind her. She was laughing.
"Such tenacity, fighting your way up from the mean streets of Dodsworth."
"Oh, piss off," Hannah said crossly. "I don't know where he got all that from. I certainly didn't tell him I was working class."
"Take the compliment and run, darling. I would."
"I know," Hannah almost said, but she bit her lip. An hour into the party, Hannah was beginning to wish she had never come. Her feet were in agony in April's heels, and she was listening to a long, tedious rowing anecdote from the boy in the navy blazer, the one April had shrugged off earlier in the evening. Far from being the sophisticated soiree she had imagined, the night seemed to have descended into Dr. Myers smoking filthy cigars and holding court with the three prettiest girls in attendance, one of whom was April. He was sitting back in an armchair by the fire, April on one armrest, Ruby on the other, and a beautiful redhead Hannah didn't know sitting on a footstool at his feet. As she watched, April turned and mouthed something over Dr. Myers's head. She wasn't sure what it was, but April's expression was full of wicked laughter. She thought it might have been so predictable.
"Totally gorgeous. Maybe for a drink or something?"
the rowing blue said, and then stopped, seeming to expect some kind of answer. Hannah shook herself and looked away from where Dr. Myers had slipped a hand around April's waist, ostensibly to steady her on the chair's narrow arm.
"I'm sorry, what did you say?" "I said, you're absolutely gorgeous," the boy said.
He had flushed a deep red that went from his shirt collar up to his fringe.
"I'd love to take you for a drink sometime. Maybe Vincent's, I'm a member, or somewhere else, you choose."
Hannah felt her colour rise in sympathy.
"Oh, God, that's so kind of you.
But what could she say?" She had a boyfriend, that was a lie, as 2 minutes' inquiry in the JCR would reveal. That was the problem with living in college. Though it had felt so very big on the first day, she was rapidly coming to realise how very small Pelham really was. Part of her wondered if she should say yes. Was she really going to spend 3 years pining after someone who had never looked twice at her? Someone, moreover, who was going out with her best friend. Go out, get drunk, sleep with someone else and put Will out of her head once and for all. That was what she would have told a friend in her position. But whoever was destined to help her get over Will, her heart knew that this boy was definitely not that person.
"I'm sorry, there's someone else," she said at last, hoping that would suffice and he would not inquire any further.
The boy flushed an even deeper shade of red, his face pomegranate-coloured above his dark blue blazer.
"Oh, yeah, sure, of course, no worries at all. I mean, well, if you change your mind, Jonty Westwell..."
He held out a hand.
"I'm over in Cloisters."
"Thanks," Hannah said. "It's a really kind invitation."
She stood up, casting about for an excuse to end the conversation.
"I think... I'm just going to pop to the bathroom."
"Yeah, sure, no probs. Nice to meet you."
"Nice to meet you too," Hannah said,
and she drained her wine, put down the glass and hobbled painfully out into the corridor, where she stood for a moment, catching her breath and trying not to groan inwardly at the hash she had made of turning down Jonty gracefully.
"So," said a drawling voice from behind her, and she turned to see April closing the door of Dr. Myers's room. "Someone else, eh? Who's the lucky man?"
Hannah felt her cheeks flush again.
"Oh, God, I only said that to get rid of him."
"You should have said yes. I know Jonty. He's thick as pig shit, but he's a sweetie, and more to the point, his dad owns Westwell Pharmaceuticals."
"He can't be that thick,"
Hannah said irritably, pulling off first one of April's teetering high heels, then the other.
She felt as if she had descended a step on an imaginary staircase, suddenly 6 inches shorter than April. I mean, he did get into Oxford to study English.
Oh, you, April said affectionately. You're so naive, Hannah. First, he's a rowing blue. Second, did I mention his dad owns Westwell Pharmaceuticals?
So, you still have to pass the entrance exam.
April made a dismissive noise through her nose.
Oh, that? I had an ex at Cannes who made a pretty good living taking people's BMAT for them.
That's medicine, Hannah retorted, but half-heartedly.
Well, whatever the equivalent is for English. Just because you wouldn't do that doesn't mean everyone else is as high-minded as you.
April, you shouldn't talk like that.
Why not? Because people will think I bought my way in too,
April said, laughing.
So what? They already think that. Why not give them the satisfaction of thinking they're right?
But they're not, Hannah exploded. I know full well they're not. Why do you talk like this? I've read your essays, April. You've got nothing to prove.
Exactly, April said. And suddenly, she was no longer laughing, but deadly serious. I have nothing to prove. So let them say what they want.
There was a silence. Then Hannah said, I'm turning in. What about you?
I don't know,
April said. She looked out the window at the top of the staircase, across the glittering roofs of the college, and away towards the water meadows beyond the Isis, striped black and white in the frosty moonlight.
I'm not sure.
Horatio's asked me and a couple of girls to go for a drink in town. I'm not sure if I can be bothered, though.
Horatio?
Hannah knew the single word dripped disapproval, but it was too late to take it back.
He's not my tutor, April snapped. He's a tutor, though. Don't you think this is a bit inappropriate?
We're not in school,
April said impatiently. Then she turned and opened the door to Dr. Myers's rooms, letting out a gust of cigarette smoke and laughing conversation.
I don't know. I haven't made up my mind.
Don't wait up.
I, Hannah said, and the door slammed behind April. Won't,
she finished to the empty corridor, and sighed, picked up the borrowed high heels, and crossed the hallway to go to bed. After. When they get home from the restaurant, Will falls into bed and straight into a deep slumber, but Hannah, though she felt tired in the taxi, finds she can't sleep. She tries hot milk, white noise to drown out Will's snores, but nothing works. Her joints hurt, her breasts are sore, everything aches, and she can't find a comfortable position in bed. At last, she pulls out her headphones and does something she hasn't done for months, years, even. She opens up Instagram and navigates to @theAprilCC, April's account. April was the first person Hannah had ever met with Instagram, back in the days when filters were strictly for coffee and plenty of people didn't even have a camera on their phone. But April had been one of an early handful to download the app, and she had known somehow that this would be big. Now Hannah scrolls back through ancient selfies with sun-soaked filters and frames to make them look like Polaroids. There are photos of April draped across punts, pictures from college bars,
a snap of some tuxedo-attired boy being led by the tie down St. Aldert's. All the drunken, laughing, unself-conscious mementos of student life a decade ago. She knows the photos well, and not just because the press mined them for publicity shots. In the early days, when they were all that was left of April and of her own life at Pelham, she had flicked through them obsessively, noting every like, reading every comment, each one testament to April's impact on the world and the gaping hole she had left.
R.I.P. April, heart.
OMG, still cannot believe you're gone. Love you.
Wow, she fit. What a shame. Lol.
It wasn't healthy. She knew that, even at the time. And at last, the pain the pictures caused outweighed her need to look, to prove that April had been real, and flesh and blood, and as beautiful and vivacious and happy as Hannah remembered. So finally, as the comments died away and the likes slowed down, she'd forced herself to stop going back. But now, looking at them again, she is struck anew by April's luminous, unpolished beauty. Not just in the photos where she is dressed up to the nines, hip jutting, makeup on point, but even more so in the candid snaps. April lying in bed in a splash of morning sun, makeup free, smiling sleepily at the camera.
Oh, hi there,
she had captioned that one. And then a series of hashtags.
Hashtag no filter. Hashtag no makeup selfie. Hashtag Sunday morning. Hashtag God, I look a mess.
I miss you, Hannah types out in the comments. And for a moment her finger hovers above the send arrow. But she doesn't post. Instead she deletes the three words and goes back to April's feed, scrolling through the decade-old snaps. A young, sharp-cheekboned Will laughing at her from the banks of the Isis makes her stop momentarily, ambushed by his vulnerability. And there, halfway down the page, is a photo that always makes her catch her breath, even though she knows it's coming. A picture of herself and April, side by side, each holding up a drink. April has her mouth pursed in a selfie pout, but Hannah looks taken by surprise. She is laughing, uncertain, looking not at the camera but at her friend.
It's a Shirley Temple, Daddy, promise,
reads the caption. And Hannah feels something clench inside her. A mix of grief and anger and... oh, she doesn't even know what emotions anymore. For a long moment she stares at the picture, at the two of them so heartbreakingly young and vulnerable and happy. Happy in a way that she can't remember being for a very long time. The urge to reach out through the years and warn the two girls in the photo is almost painfully strong. So strong that, suddenly, Hannah can't bear it anymore. She shuts down the phone and lies there staring into the darkness, thinking of what might have been. Perhaps it's because of the photos, but the next morning Hannah wakes early in the pre-dawn from a dream of April. It was not the usual nightmare, Neville's shadow looming out of the darkness, April's body golden in the lamplight, her cheeks still flushed. Instead, she was walking up one of the narrow medieval wynds that twist and turn their way up from the gardens all the way to the lawn market in front of Edinburgh Castle. She was going slowly, her hand over the baby in her belly, and then, as she rounded a corner in the passage, she saw it. A flash of gold, a shimmer of silk, and somehow she knew. It was April. Hannah sped up, going as fast as she could up the winding passageway, hurrying up the steps, and she could hear April's footsteps in front of her and see her flitting shape silhouetted against the walls of the close by the lamps. But she could not catch her. At the top, where the stairs spit you out suddenly into the bustle of the lawn market, all tourists and bagpipers and souvenir stands, she stopped, catching her breath, casting around to see where April had gone. And then she saw her. One last glimpse of a mocking face as she disappeared into the crowd far down the street. And the strangest thing was that it was April, but not April as Hannah knew her. Not the April of the Instagram photos, skin dewy fresh, a trace of puppy fat lingering at the curve of her jaw. It was April as she would have been now. A woman on the cusp of her 30s, her features sharpened to show the bones beneath the softness of adolescence. In her dream, Hannah hurried towards her, pushing her way through the crowd, straining for one last glimpse. And then she woke. Now she lies there, catching her breath, trying to anchor herself back in the present day. Grey light filters through the cracks in the curtains, and beside her she can hear Will's slow, gentle breathing. Her bladder is complaining. She always needs the loo these days, but she can't quite force herself out of bed yet. She needs a moment to orient herself, remind herself of what's real and what's not. It's been a long time since she dreamed of April, longer still since she caught sight of her across a crowded room. There was a time when she would find herself scanning crowds for April's face, her heart skipping a beat at the sound of a certain laugh rising above the hubbub, at the sight of a close-cropped blonde head weaving towards the bar. But over the last few years, those occurrences have become more and more rare. Until tonight, anyway. Now, it's as if the news of John Neville's death has stirred the mud of her memories, and images from the past float up from the depths. Not the ones memorialised on April's Instagram, but others, more intimate, more real. As she lies there, gazing at the minute cracks and crannies in the ceiling, the faces of the others rise up in front of her, not as they are now, but as they were back then. Hugh streaking across New Quad on a dare one misty morning, wearing nothing but his glasses, the blackbirds rising all around him, flapping and shrieking their indignation. Emily, bent over her books in the Bodleian, that little frown line etched between her thick black brows. And Ryan jumping from the Pelham Bridge into the Charwell in full white tie evening dress. Ryan running down Broad Street, bare-chested football shirt flying like a banner above his head after a Sheffield Wednesday win. Ryan in the Eagle and Child, downing pints of bitter and holding forth about the evils of capitalism, then standing on the table and shouting, "Rise up, my fellow workers, and seize the means of production!" Then leaping over the bar and gulping directly from the beer tap before the astonished barmaid could do anything to stop him. He got thrown out for that, she remembers. "Next time I'll ban you for life, you fucking layabout student!" The landlord had roared as he slung Ryan out into the street, the others tumbling, giggling after him. "Fellow workers, my arse, you lazy little shit!" Now, she wonders how he is, and feels more ashamed than ever of the way she cut him off after college. Beside her, Will stirs, And she looks over at him and feels her love for him clutch at her insides with a force that is almost painful. She has always loved him best when she is watching him unawares. Awake, he is self-possessed, polished, still very much the perfectly mannered private school boy who offered her a seat in the dining hall at Pelham that first night. And some part of her feels she has never really got to know him better than she did that first evening. But asleep, or in his unguarded moments, he is Will. Her Will. And she knows and loves the very bones of him. He seems to be dreaming, emotions chasing across his face, his eyes moving uneasily behind closed lids. She wonders what he is thinking, as she does so often. Will she ever learn to read him, to see the real depths of feeling that he hides behind his mild, amused manner? But perhaps that is why she loves him so much. The unattainability of him, the rare flashes of vulnerability that he reserves for her alone. Only once has she seen him cry, and that was after April's death, as they held each other and wept for what they had both lost, but also what they had found in each other. Before. When Hannah returned to Oxford after the Christmas break, it was with a sense of coming home. "Why is it called Hilary Term?" her mother asked in the car on the way to the station, and Hannah answered without even thinking, "Because the feast of St. Hilary of Poitiers falls in the middle," and then wanted to laugh at herself, at who she had become. How did she know this stuff after just one term? It didn't matter. She knew it, just like she knew how one acquired a blue and what you wore for your collections. Collections. Even the word gave her a squirmy feeling in her stomach. Three little syllables, not much to feel nervous about, but she did. "They're not prelims," she had told her puzzled mother. "You take those at the end of the first year. Collections are done at the start of every term and cover what you learned the term before." "So they're just tests? They don't mean anything?" The thing is, her mother was right, but also so wrong. Collections didn't count towards your degree class, or really anything as far as Hannah could make out, and yet everyone was in a flat spin about them, even the second years who had sat through the ordeal several times already. "What's the point of an 8-week term?" Will had texted her on Boxing Day, "when they just make us do the rest of the work in the holidays. Is it just so the tutors get time to write their books? I can't believe all my mates are out getting pissed and I'm stuck here revising." Hannah had to admit, he had a point. It wasn't just the collections giving her an uneasy feeling, though. Seeing the text from Will had triggered a sharp rush of pleasure, followed by an equally sharp stab of guilt. It was ridiculous that just his name coming up on her phone should make her grin like an idiot. He was April's boyfriend. Completely off limits. But the problem was that while her head knew that, her heart didn't seem to be able to remember it. Before the holidays, she had half hoped that her crush on Will was wearing off, and surely 6 weeks' absence would give her plenty of time to forget his wry grin, the shape of his long, slim hands, and the way he looked at her across the crowded JCR with a smile that made her heart light up. But that one single text had shown that was not true. She still liked him a lot, which made her officially the worst best friend in the world. Instead of replying to Will, she typed out a text to April, trying to assuage her guilt.
How are you? Merry Christmas. Hope you had a lovely day.
Thanks, April texted back. It was fucking awful, though I did get a Balenciaga tote, so every cloud.
Pause.
How was yours?
Pretty okay, Hannah typed back. Though no Balenciaga tote, so every silver lining.
Ha ha,
April texted with a picture of a laughing frog.
Now, as the train drew into Oxford Station, Hannah had a rush not of homesickness, but of whatever the opposite was. Homecoming, maybe. The thought of Pelham and April and their little room high in the rafters made her smile with a happiness that even the prospect of collections couldn't dim. She was getting off the train when she saw Ryan up ahead of her on the platform and half ran, shoving her way ruthlessly through the crowd of students to try to catch up with him. It wasn't easy. She was wearing a rucksack and dragging a suitcase, but she caught him at the ticket barrier where he was rummaging in his wallet.
Ryan, how was your holiday?
Hey, up, Anna Jones,
Ryan said with a broad grin, and he turned and gave her a bear hug.
How are you, pet?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty sweet, yeah. Had a good holiday, but I'm chuffed to be back.
I bet you missed Emily.
Missed the sex, anyway, Ryan said with a grin that dared her to react.
Hannah rolled her eyes.
You know full well, if you actually were the sexist pig you pretend to be, Emily wouldn't touch you with a barge pole.
She's like all clever women,
Ryan said, yanking his bag through the turnstile.
Secretly wants a caveman to throw her over his shoulder.
Hannah shook her head, refusing to rise to the bait. They shared a taxi back to Pelham, swapping gossip and catching up as it wound its way slowly through the crowded streets.
Fucking collections,
Ryan groaned when she asked him about his revision.
Yeah, I've revised. I'd like to pretend I didn't, but we can't all have a rich daddy to donate a library wing if we flunk out.
It's all an act, Hannah said, a little nettled on April's behalf. You know that, right? All that party girl, I don't care shtick. She actually works pretty hard, and she's bloody clever.
It ain't just her, though, is it? It's all of them. All them private school types getting the shock of their lives as they realise we can't all be top of the class. I mean, look at me and Will, we're mates, sure, but only one of us who's going to come out at the head of the list, and we both want it to be us. Everyone at Pelham does, and for some of them it'll be the first time they don't.
Hannah nodded soberly. It was true. Pelham wasn't the most rabidly academic of the Oxford colleges, but it certainly leaned that way, rather than towards the sporting drinking culture of some of the others. On a scale from work hard to play hard, Pelham definitely prized the first more. But nor was it the most meritocratic of the colleges. As Ryan had pointed out, it had a high intake of private school students, higher than the already high Oxford average. Taken together, the two made for a weirdly febrile atmosphere that combined academic privilege with a panicked realisation that no one here was getting a leg up. There were no kindly teachers to help with cramming or hint at which papers to revise. Here there were no extra classes, no mummy or daddy to organise after-school tutors and emergency summer school. You were on your own. Sink or swim, and Hannah had no idea which camp she would be in.
Hannah!
The shriek set Hannah's ears ringing as she opened the door to the set, and someone
barreled across the living room to fling her arms around her, almost knocking her off balance with her heavy rucksack. "April!" Hannah set down her case laughing and hugged April back. "How are you? Sorry your Christmas was a bit pants."
"Pants is not the word. It was a big steaming pile of crap," April said, throwing herself back on the sofa.
"If it wasn't for my sister, I'm not sure I'd bother to go back next vac."
"You have a sister?"
Hannah was surprised. She wasn't sure why. April had never explicitly said she was an only child, but somehow Hannah had just assumed that was the case.
"Yeah, she's 11 and a little brat, but I wouldn't leave a dog alone with my parents at Christmas. Oh, by the way," she threw out a hand at a small gift bag sitting on the table in front of the sofa.
"I got you something."
"For me?"
"April, you shouldn't have."
"Well, I did, so suck it up."
Surprised, Hannah wriggled her rucksack off each shoulder and made her way over to the armchair in front of the fireplace. The bag was small, white, and made of stiff card with handles of thick black grosgrain ribbon, and inside was a miniature parcel done up in holly green paper. Carefully, she took it out, unpicked the tape, and drew out the little jewel-bright box inside.
"Chantecaille," Hannah read out.
It wasn't a brand she knew, but she could tell from the packaging and the feel of it in her hand that that was probably because it was far too expensive for the makeup counter at Superdrug.
"Is it nail varnish?"
"Lipstick," April said. "I'm so fed up of seeing you use that horrible axle grease you call makeup."
She took the box from Hannah, prized open the top and said,
"Mouth open, please."
Hannah did so, parting her lips in that strange frozen smile that little girls learn from watching their mothers in the mirror, and closing her eyes as April stroked her mouth in a gesture so intimate a shiver ran down her spine. When she opened her eyes again, April was looking smug.
"I knew it! Go and look in the mirror,"
Hannah did. The girl that stared back at her was herself, but not herself. It was Hannah, but her lips were soft, full, and a deep rose pink that begged to be kissed. The colour was dramatic without looking clown-like, the way her dark red lipstick had. It was, somehow, perfect.
"Thank you," she said to April.
And then, without really meaning to, Hannah found she was hugging her friend, feeling her fine, bird-thin bones, her face in April's cloud of platinum blonde hair, smelling that strange dark scent that April always wore.
"I love you, April. I really missed you over Christmas."
Hannah felt, rather than heard, April swallow against her shoulder, an intake of breath, a catch in her throat. She felt April's fingers tighten on her spine, as though she almost didn't want to let go. Then she was pushed away, and it was the same insouciant April rolling her eyes and laughing at her.
"Yeah, right, you sentimental cow. Now come on, let's go down to the bar. I've got some drinking to do."